All I ever wanted was to be in love with you. When your eyes met mine, I knew that this was really true. All the flowers of spring could never make them sing like the way that our love grows.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to February 8th of 2022 with the Music of Marriage. And we are
Bob and
Evie. And we have a website called themusicofmarriage.com. And if you go there, you can find our book called How to Make Your Marriage Sing, Five Biblical Dynamics to Keep the Music Playing. And of course, there are many more, but when we were writing our book and trying to come up with a title, which we changed about 82 times, it was always, well, the books that really sell have a number, you know. The highly effective habits of seven people, or whatever that book was. It always has to have a number to sell, and we did not want to be like that. We just wanted the idea to have its own merit without a number. But we buckled, and we ended up putting the number five in the tagline. So it's How to Make Your Marriage Sing Five, but we don't say the only five. It's just five biblical dynamics. Five. Remember, there was an Andy Griffith show where Barney was very aware of the fact that it was his fifth year as deputy. And he was always looking for adulation, for praise, for, you know, he needed a lot of emotional support. And so he came in, and he didn't think anybody remembered that it was his fifth year. This was the day that he started as deputy in Mayberry. So he was always looking, okay, where's the cake? Where's somebody going to say anything? And meanwhile, he didn't know, and neither did we, the watchers, that Aunt Bee and Andy, everybody had this cake, and they knew it, and they had even had a watch made, and they had engraved on the back of the watch just the number five. Five. So,
and Barney looks at it and says, five, with a big grin on his face.
With all this meaning that you could infuse into just saying five.
Yes.
Five. But anyway, it's Valentine's Day weekend. We're already just blowing some hot air here. We better get into our... Well, that's good. We get warm things up for
Do you remember
Valentine's
our first
Day.
Valentine's Day, Evelyn?
Well, I remember that right before we were engaged, I think we were on the brink of being engaged, and it was Valentine's Day. We went sledding, and I thought that it would be really nice to have some background music. No, I thought it'd be really nice to have a Valentine for you that I made. And I thought, what can I do that's meaningful? We were being in art college and all, we made everything with our own hands, you know, painting or something. But I looked through Proverbs. I thought there's got to be stuff about the heart in there. And sure enough, Proverbs 4:23, I'm like, aha, it says heart. And it actually turned out to be a really good verse. You know, there are a few verses in the Bible that are actually really good. And I found one of them. Just kidding. It's Proverbs 4:23. It says, would you like to read it, Robert?
Of
with
course.
Feeling.
With feeling. Guard your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life.
Well, the version that I picked up used a different word beside guard your heart with all diligence, which is the one I actually used on your Valentine.
Yeah.
And that is the word vigilance. And I thought that was interesting, seeing what the dictionary definition of that was, the action or state of keeping careful watch for possible danger or difficulties. Mm-hmm. And this time around today on the Music of Marriage here, we were going to talk about love from the heart. The origin of love is the heart. like this verse says, guard your heart with all diligence or vigilance, for from it, the heart, flow the springs of life. And when you think of your water that you turn on in the tap or you buy on the shelf, spring water, it comes from deep, deep, deep within the earth. It's a very hidden place. Mm-hmm. We don't see where the origin of that spring water comes from. But the springs of life come through
waters.
Our heart. And so it's important to guard them, as the dictionary says, keeping careful watch for possible danger or impurities, difficulties. Mm-hmm. So I thought that would be a good way a good saying to put in my first Valentine that I made for Bob, but it is something that gives us fuel to not just say, oh, wasn't that sweet, you know, put it on the mantle and then throw it away and forget about it, but it's an ongoing, just like really how springs come up from the earth. How do they just keep doing that? You know, mm-hmm. Is there somebody down there with a switch? Is there, what's the resource? But they keep coming, they keep flowing, and they're guarded and they're pure if mm-hmm. they're going to be usable. And same with our heart. So in a week of seeing hearts every place we go and thinking about love and Valentine's and romance and or lack of romance or desire for romance, wherever we're at, this is a good thing, I think, to center our focus on, that love comes from the heart. So we're going to focus on this little section about the heart part of love.
The heart part. And, the heart is, according to a Bible commentary on that verse, the heart is the seat of reason and the will. So often when we think of the heart, we think of feelings of romance, et cetera. And or desire, and that's a part of romantic love for sure. But whenever the Bible uses the word heart, except for maybe in the Song of Solomon, which is definitely the romance book of the Bible, great book to read for you who are married. The heart, being the seat of reason and the will, is really the essence of love. You know, it's so love, in other words, love flows from a particular reason and it flows from your will. You have to be actually willing to give it. So, but what is this reason behind love? And that is, that dwells in our heart. And that is, understanding the true nature of love really starts with an understanding of God's love, because the Bible says that God is love, correct? But everything you say is usually preceded by something else. We think of that when we say it, make a statement. And so understanding God's love is preceded by what God did to show us his love. And the very famous verse, John 3:16, says that quite well. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have eternal life. And Jesus also emphasized that in John 15, when he said, greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. And that's, of course, what he did by example and by instruction to us. He's given us, like, the real heart of love. And so if we haven't done that, if we haven't literally laid down our life for our spouse, for your husband or your wife, then you haven't really gone the distance with love yet. And this is kind of an extreme example, laying down your life physically, which he really did. But it is a good example. But it's more than that. It's laying down your life in the sense that you're putting aside the things that are important to you and more meaningful to you to focus on what's meaningful to your spouse and what's important to her and
or him.
Or him, and try to understand that.
We were talking this morning about how lofty and high these standards are, unattainable, really. And I said to Bob, why does God give us such high examples? You know, he even says, be perfect as I am perfect. And these things we read, it's like, well, that sounds great, but, you know, you're not living in the real world. I mean, the real world is you have to put up with this, that, or I'm just not wired to, you know, I don't know that I can attain this. And you said something about how if the standards were any lower, then we'd really be, what did you say? We'd really be totally lost or something. In other words,
it's kind of
like true north on the compass. You know, God is like the true north. And if he lowered that standard a little bit just to make it easier for us, then would we want a compass where true north was kind of like, well, not really true north. It's kind of like only halfway to your destination or something.
Or grading on a curve, you know. We would, whatever you aim at is what you're going to hit, basically. So if the standard is less, then you're going to hit something less.
Like that saying, aim for the moon and at least you'll hit the stars or something. I don't know. We're getting really off the track. Is that right? I don't know. But
In the movie Patriot, who was the main actor there?
Mel
Gibson. He when he was teaching his son how to fire a rifle, he said, aim small, miss small. So
focus.
Yeah, it takes intense focus.
A narrow point.
Yes.
of setting your sights on that, you know,
yeah.
On that point. So it's a good thing that the standards for our heart, the condition of our heart, are high because, you know, just like if you go to the doctor about your heart, you don't want him to, like, lower his standard of what a healthy heart is just because yours isn't healthy. Well, you always come in here with bad scores on your cholesterol and whatever your heart. So, but I don't want to make you feel bad, so I'll just lower the standards for you, and we'll say that you have an okay heart, even if you don't. We wouldn't like that too much.
Yeah.
So we can be really thankful that God's heart, and I mean, he's the one who actually did lay down his life for every person. And in his eyes, you know, his heart of love is what motivated him to give. And that's the thing about the heart itself and love coming from the heart. And that is that it's there's a nature, there's a personality or character, I think Sting has a song, what is the shape of your heart? What we need to think about the source, just mm-hmm. like when we look at spring water bottles, what's the source? Is mm-hmm. it that dirty river over there that somebody purify, or that area where they have a battery? Old batteries stored. I don't want spring water from that town. So same with our heart. We want to maybe spend more time analyzing what's in our heart. And that, I know for us in our marriage, is probably like most people. It's really the hardest thing to do, to look at your own heart, mm-hmm. because we could hardly handle how off we really are. Right? We don't, yeah. we, it's much easier to look at the other person's impurities or failings.
Yeah, and one easy way is to look at our activities. You know, what do we engage with every day? Are we on Facebook? Are we looking, we're looking for adoration on social media, and we can't wait to see what likes are on our post. And if we don't get likes, then we're disappointed, right? Sometimes. But we all like to receive likes and love more than we give it, so that's a natural human tendency. But that comes from a heart that is in need of God's reviving. But the point is that we have to watch our tendencies. That since we do have that tendency, then we've got to say, well, is this what I should be engaged in? Is this an activity I should be doing? And if I do post something, should I really be looking for responses? And should it really matter if I get none or even get somebody who disagrees with me? So if we love to receive what's to receive, it's going to get in the way of our ability to give. And that's the problem. So these two things, giving and receiving, can be mutually exclusive. If you always want to be liked, loved, patted on the back, always looking for affection, you're focused on yourself. If you're always wanting to give affection, then you're focused on someone else and you're giving love.
And that all comes from the heart, the deep well,
yeah.
That deep well from, you know, where the water springs up from deep within the earth, deep within our heart. What is that compass in my heart? What guides my heart to automatically react in a certain way? Are we hopeless in are we helpless and hopeless in our situation? I know for me it feels like I'm comfortable with myself. I kind of like myself, and I want you, my husband, and everybody else to do what I like. But that doesn't happen a lot of times in life. So, you know, I have to analyze my heart, you know. And from my heart, often my mouth starts moving. And I have to think of that song. We should play that song by Alison Krauss. I think of it a lot. You say it best when you say nothing at all, Evie.
Yes.
Just yes, shut good. Up.
Yes.
Don't. What's in your heart that's about to go spewing out your mouth? Well, you say it best when you say nothing at all. And yes. To get my heart right, you know, before I speak. And I know there are other proverbs that talk about from the abundance of a man's heart. He speaks or from
yes
and
right.
So forth. So
whatever's down in there is what's going
to
come out.
So we need to do some real heart scanning and heart surgery
and searching
heart healthy, and from a spiritual perspective, I think that's a good thing to think about, you know, in Valentine's week.
Yeah, well, and this is where it all starts, really. I mean, you can't talk about how to have a healthy marriage or how to get through conflicts without dealing with the heart. I mean, that is the center of it all.
It's the heart of the issue.
It is.
And until we have that, we'll miss out on a lot. Just like this mm-hmm. song, there were bells on the hill, but I didn't hear them ringing till there was you.
Yeah.
And that's how it is often with God. I think that in our marriage is what awakens and reawakens. And we hear the beauty of the originator of love and all the good things, all the happy things, all the musical mm-hmm. things, all the inspiring things, the happiest, best, funnest things in life. That's all God's idea. Mm-hmm. He's the originator of it all. And that's why musicians can write music and express that. We're going to talk in the third section about love in expression. But yeah. This song, I think, just talks about, you know, what wakes us up to be able to say, oh, is that what it is? Is that what love is? Is that what should be in my heart? I didn't even know it. I didn't even hear those sounds. Mm-hmm. I wasn't willing to open my ears to hear. But when God's love enters into our hearts or into our lives, which, by the way, you know, if someone is being loving to you, whenever we love, we're acting like God. We're bringing God and His love to people when we love. Yeah. It's not just a circular thing, you know, I give to you, one hand washes the other, and we get along, and then, you know, lived a good life, mm-hmm. amen, we're dead, you have a nice epitaph. This is for eternity. This has to do with that God love God connection that we talked about in our book as well.
Yes.
So anyway, I guess we found a version by the orange juice lady, Anita Bryant. And Daryl's going to tell us the origin of this song.
Do you want me to do it in my Casey Kasem, or do you want just
yeah,
the Daryl?
Yeah, go ahead. Lay it on thick. It's Valentine's
Week. The first record hit for the former Miss Oklahoma was the ballad from Meredith Willson's Broadway success, The Music Man. Not really a new song, Wilson had written and first recorded it with vocalist Eileen Wilson back in 1950 with the earlier title and lyric of Till I Met You.
Good job. Now are you going to sing it too?
Well, why don't we?
We can all sing along.
Why don't we let the orange juice? And I wish folks could appreciate all the work that went into getting this song on this program today.
Yes. We started with the Beatles and had some technical difficulty.
Then we went back to the 40s and then 50s. Bob and I were arguing. I mean, no, we never argue. We were discussing which version to play.
That's right.
So we compromised. See. Every good marriage, you compromise. Yes. So we went right in the middle to Anita Bryant.
And Bob, I'm going to make it up to you on a future show. We're going to find the Beatles. We're going to have the proper mix. And,
okay.
And you know, because you and I love the Beatles. Evie does too.
We do.
Yeah. But here's Anita Bryant.
Hey, there you go. We're back with The Music of Marriage with Bob and Evie, and we're talking about that ever elusive subject called love. Elusive because there's so many ways you can look at it, and if you look in the dictionary, you're not going to get a lot of help, as we talked about last week, but because from a biblical standpoint, the seat of love is really practical, it's action-oriented, it's not affected by feelings or emotions, and there's a good reason, and that's because emotions cloud judgment, and we need good judgment when we're dealing with one another and trying to show love to one another and deference to one another. And there's a very practical verse from Philippians 2:3. That says, do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. So that's the attitude that we have to have in our heart in order to carry out the instructions the Bible gives us for love, how to love. And this is certainly this is certainly not only an attitude, but this is how to do it. So
there was another verse in Proverbs after that, Proverbs 4:23, about guarding your heart with all vigilance, meaning to check for difficulties or impurities and all. Then there was that verse you brought up, Bob, this morning, shortly after it, how do we move to where we can put love in action, but we have to listen to the word of the Lord, right?
Oh, yes.
That subsequent verse in Proverbs that was shortly after. It was about paying attention to the instruction. My son, hear my yes. instruction. And because you ask, I want my heart to be like that. I want to, and the good news is actually feelings matter, but we generate feelings by our actions and by our words, which come from what's in our heart. And that's why we're focusing on what's in the heart. But now with the action part, mm-hmm. as we transition to the action, it's kind of like when you're singing. Mm-hmm. And when we take vocal lessons, we have, from our awesome Brett Manning singing success exercises, basically it's like yoga for the larynx, for the voice box. And you sit in the car while you're driving or wherever you are, because you don't want people to hear you because you sound like a dying cockroach or something doing these exercises. But the heart, before that sound comes out and sounds beautiful, whether talking about love in action. So if you're singing, you want a beautiful sound. You got to go deep and do that work in the voice box, in the larynx, and go up and down the scales, high and low, with all these different configurations of sound that sound strange. But you come out, and after a few times doing that, you just open your mouth, and you're able to sing like you couldn't sing before.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same with love. How do we get from the idea of love, the concept of, oh, isn't that nice, perfect Christian love, you know, at all times, all places? Well, we get there incrementally, right? I mean, we get there by practicing it, but we have mm-hmm. to know what to practice. So we yes. hear the instruction of God to listen to my word. Then listening is a big factor before action.
Mm-hmm.
One of my sister-in-law, who's a counselor in Australia, was telling us the other day that one of her exercises that you can do this at home, and it's free. If you're having a disagreement, she said she and my brother did this, and it's what she uses in her counseling. Have the one person say, without you interrupting them, give them 5 to 10 minutes to talk and explain to you why you, the wife, moving all of their computer stuff and office stuff and papers to another spot for a really good reason was really upsetting to your husband, because he can't find his stuff, and maybe you moved this and he had it, whatever it is. There were a lot, who knows what the reasons are, but he is upset. So mm-hmm. you have your husband sit down, and you give him uninterrupted 5 minutes to 7-10 minutes to explain what all was behind why he got so upset and maybe overly angry at you for moving his stuff. And mm-hmm. all you were doing was trying to straighten up the house because company was coming and the stuff looked messy.
Yeah.
So rather than, you know, so listening. For that, and then what you do, she said, is you repeat back to your spouse what you think you heard them say.
You summarize.
Summarize
her point.
It. Then
which shows that you, whether you understand it or not.
Right. So now you're learning about their heart. So now she learns that there's actually more behind it than just that it's moved. It's that when you do that, I feel this and that because of this and that. And often there are other things attached to why we're upset, like maybe it's a continual thing that our spouse is doing. And, you know, then you end up saying, well, you always do that or whatever. But by listening and then summarizing back to your spouse what you think is in their heart, now you're connecting your heart. And now the heart, speaking of keeping, guarding your heart with all vigilance, your heart is pure, in a healthier state of connectedness to your spouse.
And then,
of course, I'm sorry, then the wife gets her turn to speak uninterrupted for 5 minutes.
Yes.
And the husband says, okay, I understand why you did that. But just taking that time to listen to each other's hearts, because often there's a lot behind these things that can cause a blow up or an irritation.
And that is putting this Bible instruction into practice, counting more others more significant than yourselves and looking to their interests and rather than your own interests. Well, you know, this was important to me, so, you know, you didn't seem to regard what was important to me. You know, those kinds of things can lead to arguments which, you know, are cyclical and usually destructive. But
isn't there a saying, didn't you learn that you never win an argument from one of these business, how to succeed in life books?
Well, yeah.
That you never win an argument because you're just arguing for the sake of arguing. So you have to break that cycle by connecting with the person's heart.
Well, and you don't win it because nobody likes to lose an argument. So it has to be a win-win situation, not a win-lose. You lose if it's when you win and he or she loses. But anyway, so, and this is where we really have to check our spirit, because this is what love in action looks like. So is our spirit an insistent spirit or an accusatory spirit? Even behind words that could be quiet and kind sounding, which is good to have words that are quiet and kind if you're expressing something, because love is patient, love is kind. That's the first two definitions of 1 Corinthians 13. And but you can say it in a quiet, kind sounding way, but have an insistent or accusatory spirit come through, and that's just as bad as not saying it in a quiet or kind way. And then also check your humility. I mean, pride is competitive by nature, and it tries to lift a person above others. So it really divides and promotes conflicts rather than harmony. And by contrast, humility accepts a place of service with concern for the needs and interests of others. And so the pride and humility are the opposite ends of the spectrum, but love is essential for humility. I'd like the C.S. Lewis quote. He said, humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. That's actually a very profound statement, because if you think of yourself less, then you really run into self-esteem problems or false humility problems. But if you think less, if you think less of yourself, I meant, then you run into these self-esteem issues. But if you think of yourself less, the only way to possibly do that is to think of others more. And so that's what humility is putting the needs and concerns of others above your own. And that also means being aware, opening up your eyes to what the needs of others are. And that's something I often struggle with. But and recently it's really been striking me that I tend to focus on my, you know, what makes me tick, what I like, you know, but am I really sensing the needs of my wife or other people, or am I just thinking of my own needs and making sure they're met? So that's what it means to be devoted to one another. Romans 12 says love must be sincere, in other words, from the heart, and and it says, be devoted to one another. And that's very important, because that devotion is really should be a daily thing. It should be a constant. And if you're married, if you're not devoted to one another, you got to seriously ask yourself why, because what is a relationship without devotion, right? What is our relationship with God without devotion to God? So it's a very similar thing.
That's why I think what we should do is plug in that song called Devoted to You.
Okay.
Right now, since we're talking about devotion.
That would be a good one.
And switch up the order. It was going to be the last song, but I think we'll put Funny Valentine last.
Okay.
And end up on a light note. But right now, we'll listen to James Taylor and Carly Simon's beautiful duet called
Devoted to You.
Welcome back to the Valentine's version of The Music of Marriage with Bob and Evie. And our website, again, is themusicofmarriage.com. Our book is How to Make Your Marriage Sing, 5 Biblical Dynamics to Keep the Music Playing. And you can even hear our songs on that website, themusicofmarriage.com. And you can email us. We are available to speak at a church or a home event or a retreat or a whatever, wherever.
Mm-hmm.
We did something at Opryland, and then COVID kind of shut that whole thing down. That was in association with a marriage encounter-related group. But anyway, we love to encourage people about love, which is an essential component in marriage, I think most people would say.
Yes.
And so here we are with hearts and flowers and red roses and all that kind of stuff this week. And sometimes, just like any holiday, it can intensify your sense of, you know, it can make you feel pretty down and out if, say, you just broke up with somebody or you know, things aren't going that great on the love train in your life. is kind of off the rails a little bit. But same with Christmas, they say, you know, and I know that's true. If you're approaching Christmas and you have like no budget and you've got four kids, and we had that one year, Bob. Mm-hmm. We had that one year. Our kids well remember the Christmas where they got a calendar. And that was it, a calendar.
And now, a Bible verse telling them to be thankful for the little they received. Yeah. That was a real consolation.
A hand embroidered, be thankful. But literally, I mean, we've been down to the bottom of the barrel, and we've been forced into submission. It was either God's way or the highway, right, Bob?
My brother-in-law, you know, Errol, said he never had a Christmas growing up.
And that's what they reminded our kids.
They were poor. But, you know, he's the most humble guy you'd ever meet. And he's
giving.
And very giving. He's doesn't have any resentment in his heart. It's a beautiful thing.
It's a beautiful thing to be poor.
But not often. To be stingy.
Right. Well, I don't know why I brought that up, except, the love account filling up or not, you know. Sometimes we can feel like at Christmas, if you go into Christmas and you're poor, or maybe someone's gone that you love, and so your Christmas is difficult. And maybe that's how it is right now on Valentine's Day for you. Maybe you're in an uncomfortable life situation, maybe you're living with family and you had your own home and now you don't have your spouse, and now you're adapting to loving a different group of people in a whole different environment in their home, in an in-law suite or some other situation. Or maybe you're now caring for a parent who you want to love, but there's always these challenges. I shouldn't emphasize challenges. Opportunities, mm-hmm. really. Because love is like a tree, a plant, a rose bush. It grows and it blooms. And if we change our heart perspective, like we're talking about love from the heart, then guard how we think about love. Guard the thoughts, like I just used the word challenges, and I said, no, think of it as opportunity, mm-hmm. not challenge. An opportunity to understand more.
That's
and to
a
be
point.
A more beautiful person to the people in your life who you can love. Even though this is a marriage show, love applies across the board. So that's what we're hoping to inspire you with here. And this third little segment, speaking of devoted to you, then often devotion will express itself. So this is kind of about love as expression or in expression. Poetry, planning. You don't have money, but what can you do that's romantic? I often would say to Bob, even if we have money, either way, it doesn't really take money to create a romantic moment, memories, mm-hmm. you know, pack a picnic, Mayberry style or something, and find a beautiful spot by a lake and go there and, you know, buy some, there's always some creative thing that we can do to lift up to the next level that love quotient in our home.
And right? Guys, you are to be the initiators of love in your home, because ultimately God holds the husband responsible for love in the home.
Did you tape that, Daryl? We need again to get this on. It is running. Okay, that's right.
Yeah, my wife tells me how to be responsible, and then I respond.
I didn't mean responsible.
Okay. Oh, I see. Well, anyway, it's very important to.
But what did you mean by that? Because I don't think a lot of people hear that, even for me, that concept. And Jay Adams, their counselor, you know, he taught us that the Bible actually does say, husbands, love your wives. How? Oh, as Christ loved the church. That's not a tall order. Okay. So it says, husbands, love your wives. That's the duty of the husband.
Yeah.
And wife, respect your husband. In other words, don't, like a cat, claw at him so much that he has a hard time carrying out his responsibilities because he's so wounded.
Or belittle him.
Or belittled. Yeah. So it's a balance. It's a dance. It's called romance.
Yes.
And so expressing our love in different ways, Bob enjoys what C.S. Lewis had to describe about that.
Yeah, all of us love the idea of a nice little garden, right? Planting a garden and making it pretty. And C.S. Lewis made a great connection between a garden and God's love that initiates what makes a garden possible, but our contribution to making it a garden as distinct from a wilderness. And since he says it so well, I'm going to read from his book rather than try to summarize this, because this is really nice. But so C.S. Lewis, it is no disparagement to a garden to say that it will not fence and weed itself, nor prune its own fruit trees, nor roll and cut its own lawns. A garden is a good thing, but that is not the sort of goodness it has. It will remain a garden, as distinct from a wilderness, only if someone does all these things to it. Its real glory is of quite a different kind. The very fact that it needs constant weeding and pruning bears witness to that glory. It teems with life, it glows with color and smells like heaven, and puts forward at every hour of a summer day beauties which man could never have created and could not, even on his own resources, have imagined. Just so, our decency and common sense show gray and deathlike beside the geniality of love. And when the garden is in its full glory, the gardener's contributions to that glory will still have been, in a sense, paltry compared with those of nature. When he has done all, he has merely encouraged here and discouraged there powers and beauties that have a different source. But his share, though small, is indispensable and laborious. And unless his grace comes down like the rain and the sunshine, we shall use this tool to little purpose. But its laborious and largely negative services are indispensable. And he's being facetious when he's saying largely negative. Anyway, when we hack and prune, we know very well that we are hacking and prune. What we are hacking and pruning is big with a splendor and vitality which our rational will never of itself have supplied. Okay, and this is the takeaway that Lewis ends with. To liberate that splendor and to let it become fully what it is trying to be, to have tall trees instead of scrubby tangles, and sweet apples instead of crabs, is part of our purpose. So see, our job is to liberate that splendor. It's difficult to make the connection of our failure to sufficiently love if we have an inadequate view of God's splendor and the purpose of our labor in liberating it.
So God faithfully promises his presence. He's at work. He's at work. He's keeping creation going now. He's putting the juice in those trees that look dead now in the winter. He's getting everything ready to bloom. But we have our part to play, right? We fertilize, yeah. We plant. Same with our hearts, same with our marriages. Mm-hmm. And his love is unconditional. And you can look at your yard, and you may not have the fancy landscaping that the neighbor has, but your rose bush is just as beautiful mm-hmm. as the guy behind the gated community. And it's just as beautiful to God that you tend that, and that you see the love of God in that rose and in that bush that you're tending to in your marriage.
Exactly.
So that's all about unconditional love. And deal with the weeds, deal with the dirt. And with the vision. And this song, My Funny Valentine, I believe, has a beautiful way of expressing that even though maybe the woman that he's singing of isn't perfection by magazine cover terms and computer airbrushing terms, which is a big trick. What's really important, I think, is sung about in this song.
Exactly.
So enjoy your week leading up to Valentine's and be encouraged.
And have a happy Valentine's Day.
My funny Valentine, sweet comic Valentine, you make me smile with my heart. Your looks are laughable, unphotographable, yet you're my favorite work of art. Is your figure less than Greek? Is your mouth a little weak? When you open it to speak, are you smart? But don't change your hair for me, not if you care for me. Stay, little Valentine, stay. Today is Valentine's Day. Is your figure less than Greek? Is your mouth a little weak? When you open it to speak, are you smart? But don't your hair for me, not if you care for me. Stay, little Valentine, stay.